The Big Picture, brought to you by Bible Society Australia, shining the light of God's Word into every corner of your world. And Sydney's Hope 103.2. There's always hope. The Big Picture, a Christian insight on the world of film, television and popular culture, with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley.
Hello, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm Mark Hadley, and welcome to The Big Picture for Monday, July 20. Coming up on today's show, we tackle a new way to approach death with the release of the Live, Die, Live Again adventure that is selfless.
And we've got a Hollywood legend joining us on the show today, Mark Dylan Baker, a guy who's been in everything from Spider-Man to Revolutionary Road. He's talking to us about his latest film.
I'm clapping my hands with glee, and we unveil the top five worst films about getting older, absolutely guaranteed to make you think the whole aging process is just a bad idea. I'm not sure if you actually picked up this week's theme. Did you pick up this week's theme?
How could we? We said like two, three sentences tops.
That's right. Thanks for playing. It's the letter N. No, actually.
Worst theme ever.
But seriously, folks, when will we start treating you like the mature, well-informed adults you are? Well, that's today.
Finally.
Because this edition of The Big Picture is devoted to our aging audience. Those members
We have an aging audience?
Well,
just by listening to
those
us?
Those who've been here. Yeah. Those members of our society who finished paying for our educations, our roads, and our publicly funded radio stations, and are now relaxing in front of a screen in their twilight years, which actually, by the way, is probably the one thing they're not watching. It was just Twilight. But this is The Big Picture, the grey edition, during which we will examine what Hollywood has to say about aging, and what aging people have to say about Hollywood, and why film directors are probably the last people you would ask when it comes to picking a retirement location on the subcontinent. And now, putting this week's show...
Quite the show we've got coming up.
And now, putting this week's show in a safe, slow-moving sidewalk scooter and setting it going at a pace guaranteed not to alarm anyone, it's Ben McKechin.
Mate, that's one of the finest intros you've done.
Thank you.
So I'll set off now at a gradual pace into now showing...
Not so fast. Thanks. Please.
Now showing Mr. Holmes is at cinemas this week. Now, you've seen this bloke as the Lord of the Rings grey hero Gandalf and Marvel Magazine's aging arch nemesis Magneto. This week, Sir Ian McKellen is starring in our grey edition because he's returning to cinemas as the most famous detective of all time, Sherlock Holmes. Now, only this time we've got a Holmes who is late in the last years of his life. He's facing not only his last great mystery, Mark, but the riddle of life itself. The motion picture Mr. Holmes borrows wisdom from the Bible, teaching viewers that even powerful talent without love is no more helpful than a clanging gong.
It was 30 years ago. Watson had left and the tourists had come back to Baker Street to catch a glimpse of the real Sherlock Holmes.
Was that him? I have seen Sherlock Holmes with the hat and the pipe.
I prefer a cigar. I told Watson, if I ever write a story myself, it will be to correct the myriad misconceptions created by his imagination.
Did you write such a story?
I'm trying to do so now.
Mr. Holmes is set after the Second World War. So Sherlock is basically in his 90s. Ian McKellen inhabits a sort of sprawling farmhouse in the remote part of Sussex, where he keeps bees in the company of his housekeeper, Mrs. Munro, that's Laura Linney, and her young son Roger, who's played by Milo Parker. Now, basically, he's a curmudgeon, a grumpy old fellow who proves a constant trial for a string of servants who are constantly leaving him, and his surface resentment arises from the way that basically Watson portrayed him. There's this moment where he actually goes into a film and he's watching a Sherlock Holmes film, you know, and it's awful, and he's, you know, and he's forever talking about the fact that...
Throws his cane at the screen.
Yeah, yeah, he's forever talking about the fact that he actually doesn't like a pipe. He'd prefer a cigar.
Poor old Holmes.
And I know, it's a terrible life, but the truth is, his real angst is about the fact that his formidable mind is failing him, because Sherlock Holmes is losing his memory, and right at the point where he realises that one of the mysteries that Watson recorded for them was not how it happened, and in fact is still out there. But now he's got to solve it for the sake of his own mind. And can he solve it in time before his entire intelligence dissolves in a sea of forgetfulness?
That sounds to me, I haven't seen the film yet, but I'm quite keen to see it. It's got really good reports all around the place. It sounds to me like it's more of a portrait of getting older drama about that, as opposed to a mystery of an aging sleuth. What kind of presentation do we get of the aging process in Mr. Holmes?
I can't think of a character that would be better for us to see grow old, because Sherlock Holmes is just this formidable sort of incisive mind. And then to give him something of the equivalent of Alzheimer's, you know, of him being able to have conversations with people and have to write on the cuff of his shirt the name of the person that he's talking to so that he can actually remember them. I mean, it's a great way to see how age just actually undoes us. You know, and so I think it's brilliant. And I don't think so you see enough like characters
go this
down
sounds like
that
quite
road.
A good twist, given we've been seeing Sherlock Holmes on screen a lot lately, particularly on the small screen with a variety of shows. The most best known one would be the one with Benedict Cumberbatch playing Sherlock. We've also had that other one with Johnny Lee Miller. But now we're jumping forward into his dotage in the early older years of Holmes. So it does sound like grabbing onto the idea of his mind fading away and looking at the impact that has on this great, great man.
Yeah, and I think that I don't think we can see enough of this stuff, because I mean, as you watch Holmes age, what you actually see, I mean, not for a start, just you named a great swathe of Holmes characters, and yet the truth is, I thought when walking this film, we couldn't see anything new, because how often has Holmes been done? But when we see him age, we actually see our human pride undermined.
Why? Like, doesn't he age well? Holmes aged well.
No, he doesn't age well at all. He gets grumpy. He gets cynical. He gets determined to separate himself from the world in some respects. You know, he's dissatisfied with what's going on with him, and that's a really human thing. Like, imagine if you took Captain America and he could age, and he had 60 years on him, and he was no longer able to bench press cars and that sort of stuff. I mean, that's putting in the ridiculous level, but it's the same path that Holmes walks, that we all walk, that the older we get, we get to this point where we go, not only we're not wisecracking about the fact, oh, my back, I can't do that anymore. Now we're starting to get really sort of like, I don't think I can do anything. What can I do? And so Holmes is really, really getting angry. And in that respect, he's most angry at himself and his own failure. And that sets us up for a great moral lesson in this film.
Which is what? I presume there are a variety of lessons coming from this film, but what in particular stood out to you?
Well, the really big thing is that Holmes realizes, and I don't want to give this plot away because there is a mystery involved here, but Holmes comes to a conclusion that the best thing he could have been was not the smart man in the room. You know, the best thing was not being the solving the mystery for the sake of king and country, but in fact, or in his case, queen, because it was Victoria. But anyway, it wasn't all about just solving everything. It wasn't
it's a pretty big announcement for Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. He comes to a conclusion, which I think is fabulous when you watch it on screen, that like Jesus says, you know, it is our second commandment, our second great commandment in life is not actually showing how good we can be, but seeing what great servants we can be to other people. It's looking at other people and treating them as we would have ourselves treated.
And Holmes didn't do that?
Well, Holmes comes to the conclusion that actually he spent his entire life showing how smart he was without any reflection on the effect solving mysteries would have on certain people. You know, and that's really kind of interesting, because you think that the whole goal is just to solve the mystery, but it's not. It is about, I mean, it's about justice, and it's about doing right, it's about bringing things into balance, you know. But that said, Holmes realizes that you can actually solve mysteries in a way that's destructive.
Wow, so to bring all this home, in a nutshell, people should go see Mr. Holmes?
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, look, this is one of those films, I'll put it out there, I would pay.
Now,
normally I don't pay.
You certainly do not.
But I would pay. I'll take my wife to see this. She will love it. Look, any other person who's sort of interested in good thinking film should go see this.
Everyone should get on Mark's email and Facebook and send him your request for where he should send the ticket money to. Mr. Holmes is now will be showing around in cinemas around the country from this Thursday, July 23. It stars Ian McKellen and Laura Linney, as you mentioned earlier, and is rated M for mature themes. Mature themes? They couldn't be more specific.
They're getting older. Look, another new cinema release this week offers an altogether different approach to the process of aging. Selfless centers on an outlandish but intriguing sci-fi concept. What if your mind could be transported into another body so that it didn't die when the rest of you conks out?
You didn't die when the rest of you conks out.
I know,
okay.
It does sound a little hackneyed, because we've done the whole body swapping thing over and over and over in cinema, but this one's kind of nice. Now, Selfless puts immortality on sale while presenting death as this basically brutal, unflinching full stop to everything everything we might have achieved, and who wouldn't want to dodge that? But it stars actor, I call him actor, honestly. Ben Kingsley is brilliant. The Good Wives, Matthew Goody, and Ryan Reynolds, who will be making his second cinematic body swap, though hopefully not following in the footsteps of that forgettable comedy, The Change Up.
Yeah, that's right. Not so great.
Look, if you had that experience, would you go into another body swapping experience? I don't know. Anyway, Reynolds' latest crack at chopping and changing brains and bodies isn't played for laughs, though. But Selfless is a full body experience, or, well, maybe something like it. We'll see.
You've built an empire from the ground up.
Mr. Hale, it's an honor. The man who built New York.
People will insist that your buildings make you immortal. Now, as you slip away, do you feel immortal?
We offer humanity's greatest minds more time to fulfill their potential.
Designed to offer you the very best of the human experience.
It's alive.
An empty vessel.
If we do this, there's no turning back. Your old life is over.
What's that?
Something to stop your heart.
What?
It's something to stop your heart.
Actor's actor Ben Kingsley stars in this as Damien. He's this rich dude in New York, as the trailer just suggested. He's a guy who's only got a couple of months to live, and so somehow hooks up with this scientist who's got these remarkable ideas, a character called Albright, played by Matthew Good. And what he's offering, as Mark said in the intro, is the ability to take the mind of somebody and put it in, as the trailer suggested, an empty vessel, some other body. And
lab grown
into this other body. And so Ben Kingsley's character Damien decides to do that, and he puts it into the rather youthful body of Ryan Reynolds.
Can I just point out for a second that if you could lab grow your own body, you would choose someone who is in their late 30s?
I'm sure you're sitting here thinking, oh, you'd probably choose me. That's exactly the body.
How often have I lain awake at night? No, this is the
Let's move back on to Selfless. So to say too much more about Selfless, the actual plot of what goes on is to give maybe too much away. Let's speak broadly about it. Both of us have seen this. And both of us came out quite disappointed with Selfless, in as much as the idea is great. I thought the setup was very good. But once the body swap happens and Ryan Reynolds effectively becomes the younger version of Ben Kingsley's mind, I thought the movie sadly shifted way too much into being more of a straight ahead kind of action thriller, a chase movie. There's a secret. Someone's trying to stop the secret getting out. Ryan Reynolds' character learns more about the secret and then has to sort of go and help people in and around that, rather than investigating this really rich idea of effectively trying to cheat death, and why humans would want to do that, and why anyone would want to offer the ability for people's minds to continue on down through the centuries.
Yeah, it's like a big idea, and then they just kind of leave it hanging. It's like, hi, here is immortality. Oh, wait, there's a car chase. Immortality. No, wait, this guy's going to jump.
There's some really good lines of dialogue early on to explain how all this works and why this character of Albright is trying to offer this. And even when you learn a little bit more about what's behind it, all that kind of thing, there's still intrigue along the way, I thought. But sadly, it way too quickly just jumped to car chases and the usual someone's going to bust into the house in a minute and try to stop you and you've got to get away.
Before you know it, what are we looking at?
Yeah, exactly right. And maybe Ben Kingsley probably got out of this too early. He's like a great center of gravity in this. Ryan Reynolds, I quite like the guy, but he doesn't really have much to do as the longer this goes along, beyond being a vessel to drive the movie forward.
I've never forgiven him for Green Lantern. I can't go beyond that.
Mate, forgive.
I will. I should. Forgive. It's a Christian show. And I will practice forgiving Ryan Reynolds, but this has not helped. This film has not really helped us. It's not helped him. Morally, I'm challenged by it. I'd like to say, though, who's the enemy in this film?
Who do you think it was? On the surface of it, it looks like this Albright guy. He's the mad scientist.
Because he's British. Because he's got that smarmy British accent. And the minute he entered the film, I went, you're the enemy, aren't you?
Of course he is. That's right. Smarmy, smart, and British. It's all there.
Well-dressed. Americans hate that.
But he's not really. It actually turns out to be death. And actually, Albright is trying to battle the enemy as well. So the technique that Albright is offering, anyone who can afford to pay for the treatment, treatment that is providing moving a mind to someone else's body. What he's saying is we could defeat the ultimate enemy, which is death. And what death does is ruins human potential. Death, death, you scourge. How dare you take this away from people? How dare death get in the way of the potential of great minds in human history? And instead, what Albright is suggesting then is we can actually like take the wind out of death's sails. And instead, we could just, you know, move this body, mind to another body. But in itself, that leads to a lot of problems, which Selfless does raise about the morality of what's going on, yeah, and even the selection process of what's going on.
It almost seemed to be more a moral question of social issues, like where do you get your coffee from, and where do you get your chocolate from, and where do you get your bodies from? You know, it was more at that level than it was whether or not human beings should try and cheat death.
Yeah, like a fair trade approach to where these bodies are, where these bodies are grown from.
World Vision will be running a campaign. Where are you getting your replacement?
And
then
there's
from?
Even a section in the middle of the film that I thought was very much like the Book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. And put simply, the Book of Ecclesiastes sort of summarizes life as things are meaningless if God's not at the center of it. And there's like a long montage sequence where you show, say, so Ryan Reynolds' character sort of embracing all the gratuitous things of life that you can enjoy, from sex to money to drinking to whatever it might be. And even that, it doesn't really investigate too much. It's just there in the movie, kind of hanging, which is left, like a lot of the other ideas in the movie, they're raised but not really dealt with.
Yeah, I think that like the whole idea that death might be a disadvantage, is there another way of looking at death?
Well, sure, there's like plenty of different ways of doing it. But you're right, Selfless does definitely present it as a disadvantage that you've got to try to overcome. And I think it ignores many different things about death. One is that it is inevitable, and not just that it's inevitable. I mean, these movies would suggest it's not. But still, within the movie, there's an admission that really it is. But set the inevitability aside, what does death provide to us as humans? And I think one of the things it does is provides perspective on what this life is about and how you should actually go about living it. And I think Selfless in its second half does move towards that as an investigation, but sadly doesn't go deeply enough into it. But also, yeah, as a Christian, if you start looking at death as there being nothing to be gained through it, as a Christian, it sort of short circuits the whole idea of what's coming after this life and into the next. And that's something that Selfless doesn't address either. It's a movie that completely devoid of afterlife and instead just focuses on the now. But I think with just trying to crush death for the sake of it, what it really robs us of is thinking about how are we going to live this life better for those around us. Because also what Selfless presents is really rich people being able to put their minds into other bodies. It doesn't say what you're then going to do with your mind. It just says if you've got enough money to pay for it, you can live forever.
And you can pretty much do the same, watch the same reruns again.
Yeah. So, like, mate, I'm with you, Selfless. Disappointing, not terrible, but from really, really great ideas about shifting minds, immortality and death, it doesn't really all come together in a satisfying film.
We agree. High five.
Wow. That's like the first, I wonder if that's the first, that's our first high five on this show.
It is. And in fact, actually, we did it for Consuela, the cameraman, who says there's not enough cutaways in the show. So that is one we've never had before. Selfless is released at cinemas nationally from this Thursday, July 23. It stars Ryan Reynolds, Ben Kingsley. Ben Kingsley's the best thing in the film. Honestly, see him do his New Yorker is great. And Matthew Good, rated M for violence, mature themes, and infrequent coarse language, which is an improvement on frequent.
That's way more specific than Mr. Holmes was about why it was rated as such. One of the things we like to do on this show is promote other people's material, and we do, Mark. Occasionally, sorry, I should say,
you're
occasionally,
because I'm about to promote my material. Yeah, but please go ahead.
Before we get to you promoting your and our material, promote somebody else's. If you go to the Insights website, Insights is a big supporter of our show. Check out Russ Matthews' review of Selfless and see whether he agrees or disagrees with what we've got to say. And also look for him.
Read whether or not he's right.
And he also presents some really good suggestions of Bible verses and deeper sort of Christian thinking about what Selfless can tell us about the world around us. That's on Insights at the moment.
And speaking of things that are actually coming or available this week in print, if you have a look at Eternity, the national Christian newspaper, you'll see that I've actually done a write-up on Mr. Holmes, a lot more detail than what we're sort of chatting about, but also investigating that idea about aging and what it would be like to actually approach aging from a Christian perspective. Mm. So with that said, on to our aging show. Ben, what have we got next?
Mark, we've got soundtrack. We're at soundtrack. We've hit that time of the show.
I like this bit. I get to relax and listen to some music.
So does everybody else. So without further ado, let's play the first track and then we'll talk a little bit about it. Mate, you must recognise that song, surely.
Surely. It is one of the compulsory tracks from The Big Chill.
Yeah, we're talking about The Big Chill, that 1983 film. That was, and we should say this is the reason we've chosen it in soundtrack segment this week. We are talking about Heard It on the Grapevine, the Marvin Gaye version of the song. This is our first selection of two in this show from the Baby Boomer Jukebox.
Films that should appeal to people who are slightly older than us.
For people that were born between, was it 1946 and 1964, that's the Baby Boomer generation. And The Big Chill, it's this movie in the 80s that really encapsulated when Baby Boomers had gone from being teens into their adulthood, but what it was like then to look back on your life and think, have I got to the point where I wanted to get to? And The Big Chill, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's sort of sparked by, it's a reunion of friends sparked by the death of a corpse, of a body that turns into a corpse. The corpse is played by Kevin Costner.
It's a thrilling role.
It's arguably the best thing he's done. But also in the film is like Jeff Goldblum and Kevin Kline and Glenn Close. It's a really great reflection of people getting together and looking at their lives and thinking, do we want to get to this point or not? With a fantastic soundtrack that's largely got loads of Motown tunes on it, which is weird given everybody is so white in the film it hurts.
Coming up on the show,
groovy, baby.
Yeah,
groovy.
Coming up on the show, we've got some more soundtrack, a more looking back to a more sort of grey edition music.
What?
Well, I was just trying to say,
You just come up with a new musical genre.
A grey edition.
Grey looking back edition music.
That's
thing.
It. And it will be big. There will be an iTunes.
There'll
be an iTunes playlist. Grey edition looking back music. Brought to you by Mark Hadley. But look, also coming up on the show, we actually have the top five worst films about getting older ever. And we talk to the elderly.
What? We
well,
do?
One particular elderly person.
But we get the perspective. I love that about this show, that occasionally we actually ask people what they think of things rather than
about
just sitting here
telling them what they should be thinking. You should be thinking this. Well, I must say that the lady we're going to be talking to later in the show, there is no telling her what to think. That's pretty straightforward. In fact, I'm not sure I get a word in sideways. So, look, coming up on the show, there's lots more ahead. Please hang with us for our Grey Edition. And speaking of our Grey Edition, Bible Society Australia's CEO and social commentator Greg Clark is back this week at his own wise thoughts on aging and asking, what does the Bible have to say about relating to your wrinklies?
The glory of young men is their strength, it says in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 29. And the beauty of old men is their grey hair. That's the King James Version. I've always found this passage odd. What's the connection between the young bloke and the old chap here? Well, the answer's found in the words glory and beauty. What makes a young bloke glorious? Well, he can run forever, he can climb a mountain and get up and do it again tomorrow. But what makes an old man beautiful? Well, it's the story behind how he came to bear the kind of head that only someone who has lived long can have. Both men are beautiful or glorious in God's eyes, but for different reasons. In Australian culture, we have no trouble honouring the vigorous young spirit, but we do struggle to know what to do with the grey head. Do we treat them with respect, or do we feel like they are the furniture of the past, more to be endured than treated as beautiful or glorious? For Australian culture overall, I think this command is a big challenge. I think we're very blind on this issue, usually until we hit our 40s, and surprise, surprise, our grey hair starts to show. Well, if you're younger than that and your grey hair hasn't shown yet, let me give you at least three reasons to respect your elders. Firstly, older people have more experience than you. If you pay attention to them, you just might learn something. They may not know how to change the Wi-Fi password, but they will be able to share with you the human experiences of childbirth, of child loss, of suffering, of failing and getting up again, of learning to cope with both success and disappointment. They've trodden paths that you will go down given enough time. It's worth hearing about their experiences. Secondly, older people may in fact need your help. The New Testament tells us that truly religious people look after widows and orphans. Two types of people, one old, one young, who are in need. Older people have used their energies on things that you have benefited from. It'd be good if you could return to them some of what they've spent. I'm not saying you need to pay back your folks as if you owe them. I'm saying you have a chance to help them when they've already helped you. And finally, you should respect older people because you are an older person in the making. The difference between a younger person and an older person is time. When you look at your aging father, you're looking in the mirror of tomorrow. And how do you want to be treated when that tomorrow arrives?
On limited release this week at cinemas around Australia is 23 Blast, yet another American film about an underdog athlete who fights against the odds to kick goals for equal treatment and audience inspiration.
That old chestnut. I know,
but before you groan and ignore its release, think again, because the true story that drives 23 Blast is actually quite remarkable. Travis Freeman is a real guy who, as a teenager, suddenly went blind due to a rare illness. And now, that in itself might not be the basis for a film, but as 23 Blast shows, Travis shocked many by taking to the field in his high school's gridiron team. That's right, a blind teen playing a sport that requires body armor for good reason, with very large kids who can see. Now, during the week, Ben had a Skype conversation with actor-turned-director Dylan Baker. Dylan is one of those Hollywood actors you've seen in heaps and heaps and heaps of movies and TV shows, but you just might not know his name.
Go and check him out on IMDb, Dylan Baker.
Honestly,
you will recognise this man's face.
Dylan, by the way, is spelled D-Y-L-A-N, a trap for young players. From the first Spider-Man franchise to Selma, The Good Wife, to Damage, and even Anchorman 2, Dylan's been a long-standing, well-regarded and busy actor. Finishing late from the set of a new HBO telemovie he's currently filming, Dylan made time to press record with Ben, and Dylan's a Christian bloke, and when he heard the 23 Blast journey of faith, it gripped him so much he just had to share it with the rest of us, which is why it ended up being his directorial debut.
Dylan Baker, thank you so much for joining us on The Big Picture. Now, just to set the scene a little bit for people who are listening, it's 1:20 a.m. where you are in Atlanta, Georgia, correct?
That's true.
Mate, you are such a trooper for the cause that you're doing this in the early hours of the morning. We really appreciate it. What's it like being a character actor who, I presume you would get this in real life, people would come up to you and say, you're that guy, I've seen you in that thing, I don't know your name, but I know your face. You are one of those actors, are you not?
I do get that quite a bit, I have to say. And right now, of course, I assume you have The Good Wife down in Australia.
We do, we do.
I just did a play on Broadway with Helen Mirren, a play called The Audience. Invariably, everybody wants to talk about The Good Wife. And they all have the same question. That, did you really kill your wife? Did you? Did you or didn't you? Tell me the truth. Did you? And I always, of course, say, hey, allegedly, yes, I did.
The reason we're talking to you is because you've made your directorial debut with 23 Blast, which is hitting cinemas around Australia this week. Why 23 Blast?
A friend of my wife's, Tony Hoover, who had never written a script, came to us and said that she was really interested in this story and that she'd written this script and would we be in it? And so I started helping her out with it, and the script had a lot of problems. It didn't have any conflict in it, but it had a great story. It had the story of Travis Freeman, this young boy in Corbin, Kentucky, who grew up playing football, had a normal existence, and then one day woke up with this horrible disease having attacked his optic nerve and left him completely blind. The parents did their best through their faith and through Travis's strong faith to keep him connected to the community. He stayed in his public school. One thing that he was missing was football. American football was such a big deal for him that his parents went to the coach of the team and said, we'd like Travis to be a manager on the team or do something with the team. And the coach said no. He said, if Travis is going to do anything, he's going to play.
Wow. And course he said that. Of course.
Of course he did. Why wouldn't he? I have to say it's an amazing story, and that much more so because it's a true one.
But you've had to change some elements of it, haven't you? Which, you know, does tend to happen whenever you make a biopic. Of course you're going to make some changes. But it sounds to me like the core of the story of Travis himself, was what drew you to it.
Exactly. I mean, the one aspect of the story that is so fulfilling is this kid, Travis. guts and his amazing faith. And what we try to do with the film is show that this boy summoning up the courage to step into the middle of a very, very violent game of American football, he had to summon up the uttermost of his faith in that he was going to be protected. Also, this boy, Travis, when he was afflicted with this, he always saw this as something that he could use to help people as he became more and more enthralled with the idea of becoming a minister, which he did. And he's gone on to give the word and to give the message that no matter what you're going through, you can get through it. There's a way to go on. There's a way to face adversity and try and make your life as fulfilled as possible.
You've mentioned faith a couple of times, Travis and his family's Christian faith, but in 23 Blast, Christian faith isn't necessarily to the fore. I presume that was a clear choice of yours, and I'm just interested in why. Is it a commercial consideration to not make Christianity more prominent in this story?
I think it's more my sensibility. I've always felt like I wanted an audience to come to the film. I want to give them the story. It's very much the story. It's not a lot of fluff and mirrors and nonsense. A lot of people make a lot of talk about Christianity and talk about what is right, what is wrong in the world. But I always think it comes down to our personal relationship with our Savior. And that's to me is the most strongest thing about Christianity, is that it offers you a personal relationship with a higher being that can get you through the roughest patches of your life and tell you that there's something bigger than you and that you should keep going.
You're a man of Christian faith. It must be a difficult balance to strike to how to present a Christian character when you're trying to appeal to as broad an audience as you can. Will 23 Blast, though, still largely play to the quote-unquote faith-based film audience, or do you think it'll go broader than that?
I have to say it has crossed over very well. The audiences that have seen it in America, I've had both kinds, people that say they have no religious affiliation and people that are devout. And I have to say they've been very, very overall, very high marks on the film. They have a great experience. They love the story. And they love the ending is incredibly feel good. And you leave pumped and excited to know that this is a story that is based on a true one.
Christian projects, faith-based projects in the last couple of years do seem to have increased in quality, and everything from the sort of acting talent and behind the scenes talent you get, as well as the script and that sort of stuff. I'm wondering whether you wanted to comment on that, whether you think that actually is the case, and if it is, where do you think kind of Christianity on screen might be headed?
I do think that there are, from the few people I've met in the faith-based world of film, that they are realizing that this is no longer just a niche filming experience, that it can be something that the entire audience can enjoy if it's done well, if it's written well, you get quality actors. People are saying, well, let's apply the best aspects of filmmaking to a good story and make a positive story that Christians would enjoy seeing.
Mm, and hopefully then those who aren't might also latch onto it and possibly be some way encouraged towards learning more about Jesus. And hopefully it could be a positive step on their way to actually inviting Jesus into their own life. That would be amazing if someone did that from a film.
Yeah. I'm for that.
Mate, Dylan Baker was such a trooper when I was recording that interview. And as I said right at the start of that, it was
he
like
didn't
one
mind that you forgot to press record the first
was,
three times.
Thank you very much. It was 1:30 in the morning where he was. That's officially the latest interview that we've done. Not oldest. This is the oldest show we've done. Latest interview we've done. Like, what a great guy. 23 Blast is showing in selected cinemas on Wednesday, July 22 and July 29. If you want tickets and more information about where you can go and see the film, that can be found at koorong.com/tickets.
There you go. This week in our top five, I let my inner retiree out and have a rant.
What did that look like? We're about to see what that looks or sounds like.
And have a rant at what Hollywood fails to understand about aging with my top five worst films about getting older so far. And I say so far as opposed to ever, because if there's one thing I've learnt from my grandfather, it's don't worry, it's bound to get worse before the day is out. True story. So for now, though, let's see what the blue rinse will set flying with...
Five.
My worst film starts with a sort of a side take to the worst film about aging. It's Back to the Future 2. Now, I know you have a personal commitment to the Back to the Future franchise.
I like the way you use commitment. I surely do, yes. But I'm willing to let the next couple, like the first one, if you had a go at the first one.
Yeah, if I had a go at aging.
But explain the second one.
Well, it's not so much actually the acting or anything like that, or even the plot and concept. I think it's a great, fun franchise. It's how they make people look old.
So
this film is a stand-in for me for all those films that really do aging badly. When you actually do a film that's stretched over 50, 60 years, at some point someone's going to be slathering on the latex. This one, directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd, your classic sort of stand-up, but Lee Thompson plays Marty McFly's mother, and her makeup effects are truly, I would say, awesome, except they're awful.
Awesomely awful.
Or inspiring in their awfulness. She goes pretty much from a Tinkerbell teeny bopper to a fat 50 Marty mum who basically she can't catch a break because no matter how they style her, she tends to look like she's been inflated. An honourable mention in the same category of films that really do it badly would have to be J. Edgar.
Oh, amen.
2011, We see Leonardo DiCaprio as FBI director J. Edgar Hoover, who, when he wasn't wearing a dress, was apparently sporting latex jowls so long they made him look like a basset hound.
Or Statler or Waldorf from The Muppet Show.
He was a Muppet.
Four.
Now, my next fourth worst film about aging has to be 1982 classic, apparently, Mark Rydell's On Golden Pond. Now, I realise at this point there are a lot of people who really love the play and probably adore the film who are now slamming their digital device down.
I know, the movie's quite beloved, I understand.
No, it's not. Basically, it's about an old man who turns 80 and there are some loons involved who are birds, not the cast, though you could swap them around. And I would like to tell you more about it, but basically I fell asleep in my JC recliner. This is one of those films that is really, really mind-numbingly boring.
Isn't this Henry Fonda and Catherine Hepburn?
But it's interminable. It's got some of the best cast ever, and yet it goes on and on and on and on. And when you think it's going to finish, no, it goes on. The only film that comes close to doing aging this badly and basically gives the experience of aging
is
Cocoon. From 1985, Ron Howard's film that mimics the pace of growing older. You can actually feel the minutes ticking by as that film goes on. The only science fiction film that I've ever asked my parents to please switch off.
Three.
This moves us to a category of film that basically I just wonder why they bother. Okay, and in my why they bother and aging collision, it's And So It Goes. From 2014.
Thanks for bringing that up.
And just when you'd had all that expensive therapy to forget it, it basically stars Michael Douglas and Diane Keaton. And Rob Reiner's the director. He should have known better.
Man made When Harry Met Sally and This Is Spinal Tap. That guy's
Stand
made some
by
good,
me.
The Princess Bride.
Actually,
that guy's made some great. Yeah, he did that
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he did Stand By Me, yeah. I know, brilliant.
And then he made And So It Goes.
And I think it's And So It Goes My Bank Balance. You know, because basically it was...
And all that time I'm never getting back.
Yes. You Can Start Again is basically the theme of these sorts of films. And I don't mind that as a genre, you know, the You Can Start Again, You Can Do Over film, even though you're a jerk your entire life and you get to keep being a jerk all the way through the film and somehow still be redeemed. What, did I miss the point? Sometimes you have these elderly films where elderly people start crotchety, end crotchety, and yet somehow we're supposed to believe that there's been a change. Okay, And So It Goes is maybe one. Something's Got to Give is basically in the same category. And what's got to give? My patience. I have no time for that film. Jack Nicholson and Diane Keaton, directed by Nancy Myers, short-sighted characters who somehow still manage to make good but don't.
Two.
Now, if we're going to have a look at a film that really kills me when it's to do with the elderly, it's that sort of film that decides the only way to see the elderly are people who are largely overweight, smelly, and tell interminable anecdotes. Now, the only reason I worry about that is basically it's probably me in 5 years' time, overweight, smelly, and telling interminable anecdotes. But the one that really gets
notice
my
I didn't make any remark to that whatsoever.
You're just nodding supportively, which in itself I find quite suspicious. The Nutty Professor from 1996 has got to be
great choice.
I was going to say peak, but probably pit for how you see elderly people.
Do you
people.
Mean the first one or the sequels, those Clump movies?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
The whole thing.
The Clump family, okay, who's introduced in
the
Nutty
Clump
Professor,
franchise.
Yes, goes on to become basically the Clump franchise. The most offensive member being Grandma Clump, played by Eddie Murphy, who incidentally plays the entire... Don't you do that. Don't you come over here. Because you get to see him as basically a woman in a grey wool cap, and that's apparently all the makeup you need for being an old woman. The idea is that you get old and that's permission enough to tell long, pointless stories, break wind with abandon, and say anything inappropriate that comes to mind. And it's going to be funny. Well, I'm here to tell you that I'm not saying that that's not what happens when you get older. It's just not funny. And I don't need to pay money to see it.
One.
But coming in at number one.
Mate, you almost need to take a break. Take a breather.
I'm telling you, this is my old age rant. This is my inner retiree.
What are those shows? Angry Old Men or Grouchy Old Men? Grumpy Old Men.
I can do this.
Is Grumpy Old Men at number one?
No, Grumpy Old Men is not Space Cowboys is. The year 2000. We turned the millennium. Lots of things happened. People were evaluating themselves. We were deciding where we would go as a race. No, they brought this film out. Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, Donald Sutherland and James Garner showing just exactly how old they can be. Directed by Clint Eastwood, it's basically in the same category of the Bucket List and Last Vegas. The idea is that just because you're old doesn't mean you can't act young. Hey, you know what? It does mean that. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, or maybe you shouldn't. Or maybe there's a reason you're not young anymore.
There is a grace in aging, which really should be taken note of. There's a wonderful part. Greg Clark actually picked it up when he was talking about his part earlier in the program. If you've just tuned in for my rant, please rewind. I've got to say that there is a glory in getting older, and the Bible's clear about that. That there is a wisdom and a stateliness, that there is a point to pause and to understand what these people say. And if you actually want to, take a Christian approach to aging, if you want to think about it, it's not about trying to pretend that it didn't happen. It's not trying to sort of take your entire life and turn it into this space cowboy franchise, you know, where somehow you're going to be, well, you're not going to go up into a spaceship and basically save the planet, but maybe it's not about buying a roadster either. Maybe it's not about, you know, trying to be 20 years younger. Maybe it's about handing on the benefit of what you've actually learned. And for young people like myself, you know, maybe it's about actually shutting up and listening for a change, as opposed to talking, which is what I'm doing now. That's my top five for this week.
Wow, mate. It's hard at the end of a worst top five list to then go, and now we should play something from the movie, but let's play something from the movie.
I can't fill up a space shuttle with geriatrics.
Clock's ticking, Bob, and I'm only getting older.
NASA wants to send us into space.
I told him I'd only do it if the original team did the job.
I'm gonna need to pray about this. Why the hell not?
You and your entire crew will have to meet the exact physical requirements as any other astronaut here.
Go!
These men are the pioneers of this business.
My damn teeth.
Damn, Jerry.
They were around when rockets were born.
I don't want to drag up fresh wounds, Mark, but just to draw us quickly back to that.
Poke me again.
Just to draw us quickly back to that clip from Space Cowboys. Yeah, it doesn't get better just listening to the trailer, does it?
It gives you one of those sort of like shivering moments when you say to yourself,
It does exist. It does
never
exist.
Again. Space Cowboys 2 will be released by the same cast.
But I'm glad you got it out of your system. Now, on to soundtrack choice number 2. And as we did at the top of the show, we'll play something from our Baby Boomer jukebox. And before we talk about it, let's hear it.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure most people listening to this show, particularly given it's the graying, the aging episode, would recognize the fantastic tune Mrs. Robinson performed by Simon and Garfunkel from the film The Graduate. But interestingly enough, the song doesn't appear, apart from the chords of the song appear in this very famous scene towards the end of the movie where the character played by Dustin Hoffman, Benjamin Braddock, is running down the street to interrupt a wedding, which is quite, at least a really fantastic end scene that sort of summarizes this whole movie for everybody. But we chose this because A, it's a fantastic song, and B, we just want an excuse to play it. But the movie The Graduate was this a great film in contrast to The Big Chill, which was people looking back on their life. The Graduate landed at a time that was sort of a meeting point of different eras where you're moving on from the kind of the radicalness of the 60s into the, like, who knows what's going to happen in the future, 80s. And the movie is set in the 70s, but it was also a turning point of eras between teens and adults and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you got this whole wrestling of age in it because some of the key characters are reaching that point where they can't really behave like that anymore.
Yeah.
And really shouldn't.
And in short, if you haven't seen The Graduate, go and check it out. It's a really amazing movie.
Classic
about
film,
people
seriously
being adrift in a society and particularly focused on this character of Benjamin Braddock, who just doesn't know what the future holds, doesn't know which way to go, and runs into the open arms of a housewife next door. Summarizes a lot about American society and the world at that time. Mark, this is the point in the show where usually we tell people what the kids are going to be watching this
week. And
there's
no point in the Grey Edition.
No.
No, the Grey Edition will be going to new heights, or in this case, new steady slopes that can be accompanied with, you know, traction surfaces.
Yeah, and just changing one word in the title to what your parents are watching. This week, what your parents will be watching is the DVD Blu-ray release of one of the golden oldies of cinema. Actually, that should have actually read cinema marketed to golden oldies. Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah. So the second best exotic Marigold Hotel, it's a feel-good film marketed directly at that portion of the audience who are growing older and wondering whether there is any place left for them in life. Could it be at a ramshackle hotel, or could it just be at a cinema or around a TV set watching older people in a ramshackle hotel? Now, sure, if you're cynical, you might call this Marigold sequel a shameless revamp made to spin more money out of the older audience that enjoyed the same plot, the exact same plot, in the best exotic Marigold hotel. Well, actually, that'd be if you're Mark. You would think that. But this week, we actually sent Mark out to talk to the target market of the second best exotic Marigold hotel to find out what elderly Australians actually want to see at the movies.
Well, I'm sitting here with Eilean Nicholls, who is in fact an elderly person. Would that be right to say that you're elderly?
I think you can call me elderly, yes.
How old are you, Eilean?
I am 78 and a half, and I'll be 79 at the end of this year.
Now, I'm going to just sketch this in for people who are in Radio Land and listening, fans of The Big Picture. Just so you know that this is a bona fide elderly person that we're talking to. Eilean is sitting here with a little table next to her Jason recliner, where she's got her needlework and a rug on the other side of the chair, just in case things get a bit chilly.
Crossword.
And your?
Crossword.
Yes, because you don't go far without crossword pens.
No, I do not. I love my crossword.
Now, let's ask about film. We want to know why. What do elderly people look for in a film? When you're choosing a film, what do you really look for in a film?
I look for good acting, what I consider good acting. I look for entertaining, a good story. And that's sort of more or less it, I think. Just something that entertains me, what I think entertains me.
When you talk about entertainment, are you talking about, like, plots that are thrilling, or are you talking about life plot? Are you more interested in stories that are about life?
Yes, I definitely am, yes. But I have never liked violence. I can remember as a child, whenever I saw anything, productions, you know, amateur group that put on plays sometimes, and if they fought on the stage, I would run home.
You say that you're not very happy
I
with
hate
violence.
Violence.
You hate violence on the screen. Do you think that is, though, something that is different with this present generation? Do you think that people today are much happier with violence on screen than...
They seem to not affect them at all. When I see what my little grandchildren, they watch on TV, it would have frightened the living daylight out of me when I was their age, and I would definitely not have watched it. So I don't. They must look at it differently. Now, I don't know if they think of it as violence or if they're just so used to that this is just fun, this is just how people hop up and down and, you know, shoot things in all directions or something. And I can see it now, of course. I know that it is not a real of what, but when I was a child, it would have frightened me. Absolutely. I would have been so scared.
Now, I know you don't want to be boxed into any particular category, and you want to say that it's wrong for me to, obviously, as a film reviewer, to try and put elderly people in general into a category, but science fiction films. Now, I know you're a huge fan of science fiction.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I do not like science fiction movies, as a rule.
Now, as a rule, even though we're not putting anybody in a box, why don't you like science fiction films?
Because I think they're—I don't know—they're just silly. I think to a lot of them.
What, you don't think that Terminators can come back from the future? And...
No, I do not. No, I do not think they can do all these things. And another thing, I think today—you never know what you see on TV, whether it is acting or whether it is computer generated or whatever it is you do. And I just, to me, it doesn't do a thing for me. I don't think it's entertaining. I don't think it's funny.
But going back to one of the things you said earlier, how you like a really good performance, do you think that's part of it, that you really like the human skills rather than the computer
Definitely.
Skills?
Definitely. Or you can take an actress like Judi Dench is my favourite actress, I think, and put on with her Meryl Streep to take an Australian, Kate Blanchett is a tremendous actress. And I think there are people who can... I don't know how they do it, but I think that they are able to put themselves into other people's shoes and sort of transform themselves to be that person.
You did say you like Judi Dench.
Yes.
And coming out this week is the second best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Yes. Have you seen that film?
Yes, I have. And I think it was lovely.
Now, that's a film about people getting older.
Yeah.
What did you like about the film, or what did the film say to you?
Well, I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was well acted, and it was beautiful photography. I like the stories of the different people. And how you can, just because you're old doesn't mean that life stops or you are in a box and now you only like that kind of thing or now you only do this or not. You can do whatever you like when you get older too. Some of us like to sit in a chair and do crossword, and others like to travel the world. And... you know, and then you just have to let your health comes into it a lot, how you feel and what you can and can't do. So,
speaking of what you can and can't do, will you be lining up for the DVD release? Are you going to be there sort of waiting as extra special?
I'll be on Foxtel and then I'll see you there.
Or send one of the grandchildren down. Let them stand in line for you.
Yeah, okay. Do you think we have to stand in line to get it on the DVD? Or?
That's a good point. I don't think we'll have to.
No, I don't think so.
The Marigold Hotel has been going properly for 8 months now. People who come and go, but there's been a core of regulars from the beginning, and Sunny takes a roll call every morning.
A most valuable precaution to ensure that nobody has died in the night.
Mrs. Evelyn Greenslade.
Here.
Douglas Ainslie.
Yeah, I'm here.
Mrs. Madge Hardcastle.
Here.
Norman Cousins and Miss Carol Parr.
Both here.
Mrs. Muriel Donnelly.
Was left.
That was before that clip. That was Elin, an older, wiser Australian, telling us all why we should watch the second best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
And we might actually get her a copy to save her getting out of that
chair. I don't
want
her to line up for it.
No. Well, we could push the chair in to the line.
As Elin told us, her favourite actress, Judi Dench, is in the film. So is Maggie Smith, Dev Patel, Richard Gere. And it's rated PG for parents and grandparents, seemingly. And it goes on sale this Wednesday. Also out this week, Mark, brings us to the end of the show where we like to let all of you know what else is around at cinemas, DVD on the small screen. At cinemas, there are a few other choices around apart from Mr. Holmes and Selfless. One of them is Man Up, which we'll be telling you much more about in next week's podcast. So you'll have to wait a week to hear more about that. But in short, that stars Lake Bell, Simon Pegg. It's a romantic comedy worth watching, a little bit sweary, but very funny. Also around with a film we both of us have seen, a movie called 13 Minutes, which is from the director of a fantastic film called Downfall, which was out about 10 years ago, that was about Adolf Hitler and the final days of his life. Now this director has taken this like similar event, similar person, but from the other perspective. 13 Minutes is actually about a bloke who in 1939 single-handedly tried to kill Hitler at a public rally by planting a homemade bomb at the rally to blow up and kill Hitler.
It's a brilliant story. It's like, and it's a one man thing. It's not like some amazing sort of a Mission Impossible team. This is a guy who took it into his head he had to do something.
Yeah,
the only limitation of the film I remember in seeing it together was that there was no free popcorn.
There was that. But obviously he didn't succeed. But it's a film worth getting along to just think about: do the ends justify the means? Like, should you take the law into your own hands to affect a particular situation? It's a very fascinating film about that. Another film out this week that I definitely won't be seeing is a movie called The Gallows, which is one of those found footage horror movies, something to do with teens in America putting on a play that years ago people died while making the play.
Blair Witch, anyone?
And then some ghost comes back to, yawn. It's got about 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. I was out at that point. Very quickly on DVD and Blu-ray, there are a couple of films that we've talked about earlier on The Big Picture, including Big Eyes, the Tim Burton's film, a biopic about an American artist and how she was cheated out of her royalties and her fame by her own husband. Well worth a look. Another film I'm interested in, have you seen 71?
No, I haven't.
Curious about this. It's about a British soldier who's abandoned by his unit when there's a deadly riot going on in Belfast in 1971. It's about the IRA versus the English at that time and just the explosive urban guerrilla warfare situation going on then. It starred the bloke who was in Unbroken, Jack O'Connell, meant to be quite a decent film. And finally, Snow White has again been re-released on DVD and Blu-ray, Mark. Walt Disney's first full-length feature animated film. It's a fantastic film, but begs the question, do we need another version? Like,
I'm
that'll
asking,
make probably six versions of people
have
at home.
What have they changed? Because I actually distinctly remember them doing a DVD campaign about 4 or 5 years ago and saying, this is the last time we will release this.
Sounds like
what's happened?
And while we're in the aging edition, it sounds like a John Farnham retirement. This is my last concert thing, and he
never
does five later.
Never trust a mouse with ears that big.
No, so honestly, maybe don't trust John Farnham and don't trust Snow White, but it's back again on DVD and Blu-ray for the whole family to enjoy.
Well, look, coming up in this week on TV, and of course, we did say earlier in the show, if you didn't miss, Second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel is out this week on DVD.
Ellen's going to be there.
She'll be there rocking away. Okay, look, on TV this week, there's a couple of things that are kind of worth seeing. Now, I'm just a caveat around this. There's been a fair bit of chat around a new Don Cheadle comedy, okay, on 11 called House of Lies.
I love Don Cheadle. He's great.
I know, exactly. Now, I'm just being cautious here because I haven't had a chance to check this out yet, okay, but it's basically about Don plays Marty Khan, a big money earner at Galweather and Stern, one of the nation's largest management consultant firms. And it really lifts, it's a comedy, it's also a bit of a sort of drama about lifting the lid on the sorts of things that marketing companies do to make people look big, but really it's all about signing the billable hours, you know. And so it looks fun. Check that out. It's on 11, so you can actually, the channel 11, not 11 o'clock tonight. So look, if you check that out, it's well worth seeing. But one of the interesting things, right at the other end of the spectrum, ABC3 is on July 20 this week, is actually releasing a new mini sort of 15-minute mockumentary on little lunch kids at that miniature break in school. You know that point where you get 15 minutes basically to go out.
It made a show about recess?
It's 26 mockumentaries on recess. Now, I thought, okay, fine, this is just, you know, it's quite fun. It's quite good. I'd recommend it. Go have a look. It's on ABC3. Episode 1 starts this week. And now this is, again, like socially, couldn't be further away, but really is affecting the youth of the world. ABC One starts this week, this Sunday, A Week on Drugs. They're beginning with 7 documentaries with Russell Brand investigating the world's worst drug problems, what they're doing to cope, and what's really making the difference in the war on drugs. And I say 1 week, but actually it's 2. Then they're going to roll on 7 more documentaries on drugs. So basically the ABC is putting a focus Sunday nights and then every night thereafter on drugs in this world. And I think actually as responsible Christians, it's better to actually understand the issue than just to say you shouldn't do that. It's better to understand.
Get informed rather than bury your head in the sand.
Yeah, so well worth it looking at that this week. Next week, though?
Mate, next week on the show, my goodness, somehow in the one show, we're going to manage to discuss manners.
Manners?
Manning up.
Manning up.
And being a spy.
Okay, I didn't see the connection, but there you go.
Absolutely no connection apart from it all be housed in the big picture next week. Join us then. I'll still be then that week, Ben McKechnie.
And I was, as always, Mark Hadley.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production and part of Hope 103.2's family of podcasts and vodcasts.